Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Dr. Reese Patterson and his friends and family. And I want this to be the best year ever for all our friends worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce, Barry, and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is joycebarry.com. Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Folks, we have a very important show today. It's all about survival and the healing process with someone who knows firsthand all about that, Dr. Reese Patterson. He will discuss what it takes to survive major health challenges. Dr. Patterson will discuss the two levels of disease, physical and emotional. Today you will learn about the role you play in your own healing and be inspired to do what it takes to get healthy and stay healthy. Now, who is Dr. Patterson? At its best, athletics brings us to a higher place. It allows us to compete, not against each other, not only against each other, but against ourselves, challenging us to go beyond our limits and to live our full human potential. Tennis partners Reese Patterson and Stan Ford exemplify this striving. Through tennis, their friendship and their fortitude, both men overcame life-threatening illnesses to win the United States National Tennis Association Men's Senior Grass Court Championship at a number one ranking in 1991. Patterson, a retired physician from Knoxville, rallied from a four-year battle with stomach cancer. Ford of Gatlinburg prevailed in a life-threatening ordeal with Wegener's syndrome before succumbing to ALCS Lou Gehrig's disease in 1998. In the late 1980s, Patterson was so depressed by his condition that Ford finally laid it on the line. Die here in your bedroom or on the tennis court. The choice was easy. The two had been doubles partners for 22 years and had won national championships in 85 and 1986. Amazingly, after their 1991 climb to the top, they even won events up until 1996, the year Ford was diagnosed with ALCS. Patterson is clear on the role tennis had in both their lives. Tennis gave us something to look forward to. It took us to the land of the living. Today, Patterson talks to people all across the country and around the world working with other stomach cancer patients. He mails out hundreds of his cancer manuals on how and what to eat. There's always hope, Reese Patterson tells us. He should know. He's living proof. Dr. Patterson, it's an honor and a privilege to have you back on our show. I know you joined us several months ago, but it's very timely right here, right now, because so many people are going through so much and battling their health challenges. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And I talked about your love for tennis and having a passion for that took over your life rather than focusing on your illness. So what do you want to share about that?
Well, I think, Joyce, that to begin with, I want to pay a tribute to your guest last week, Dr. Bernie Siegel, who has given so much hope and coping techniques to cancer patients for the last 30 years. I cannot say enough in his support, and thank him again.
Excuse me, sir. I just want to refer people to that show since you mentioned it. In our archives, April 8th, The Art of Healing, Dr. Bernie Siegel, April 8th. So that was, within the last week. And I just want to say he's got over 20 published books books that were bestsellers. He's extraordinary. He's humble. And he's a very special guest as well. Back to you, Dr. Patterson.
Well, to go back, in 1987, a busy medical practice, and being a typical male, I felt that I could handle anything and that I was invulnerable. And because I was pushing so hard in my medical practice and also establishing one of the first large racquet clubs in the South here, I began having all kinds of early warning symptoms that I ignored, GI problems, reflux, headaches. And then finally, I was diagnosed with advanced stomach cancer, and the local oncologist said, Reese, this is a very rare type of disease. I want to send you to somebody who does a lot of this up in New York. And his name is Dr. Murray Brennan at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Hospital in New York. I went up there, and Dr. Brennan carried out drastic surgery in 1987, in which he removed my entire stomach, my lower esophagus, part of my intestines. But unfortunately, the cancer had spread beyond the stomach into the lymph nodes in the abdominal cavity, and that was not good news. Came home and very depressed, because I just figured, really, I had no chance. The prognosis for stomach cancer is usually very poor.
And what year was that?
It was 1987.
Wow. And here you are, alive and kicking at the age of 90. Yes, folks, Dr. Patterson is 90 years young. His birthday was January 5th of this year. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm still playing tennis 3 or 4 times a week. That keeps me going, Joyce. But at any rate, when I lost the weight, I just gave up and literally pulled the shade down and waited to die. At that desperate juncture, doubles partner Stan Ford came in and said, "Reese, put your tennis clothes on. We're going to hit some balls." I said, "For God's sake, Stan, you're going to kill me." Well, he said, "I'd rather you die on the tennis court than in here with the shades pulled down." He got me out, got me going, and gave me hope. And the quality of life from then went up and up. It was a jump start I desperately needed. And then 2 years later, he came down, as Joyce said, with Wegener syndrome, a rare autoimmune syndrome, which is usually fatal. And the doctors at the hospital tried a new drug from Germany called Cytoxan that miraculously enabled his kidneys to function again. And then a few months later, I went in and got him out of the bedroom and back on the tennis court. And the lesson here is that we all have to have hope, and we have to have something that we can look forward to, some activity, some interest that will make us get out of bed in the morning. And that's what tennis did for us. Amazing enough, Joyce, had previously won tournaments around the country, had won national championship. But then we decided to go for the big one, and that was the National Grass Court in New York at Cedarhurst. And so Stan reminded me that we had never seen a grass court before. And I said, "Well, let's go up there and see what it's like. We have no rankings to protect because we've been out of circulation in tournaments for 4 years. We got up there and we realized this was a totally different game. When the ball hit the grass, we had no idea where the ball was going. It's not like hard court or clay court. And after a day or two practice, we almost left to come home because we didn't know what in the world we were doing. But then Stan made a really great observation. He said, "You know, if we could eliminate the bounce on the grass court, we could compete with any of these guys. But it's the bounce that's killing us." I said, "What you're suggesting then is just serve and volley. Don't let the ball hit the grass except on the serve." He said, "That's right." Joyce, it worked like a charm. And in the process, we became the laughing stock of the tournament. To see these two guys from Tennessee who had never seen a grass court before were afraid to let the ball hit the grass, but yet we were winning both singles and doubles. By the end of the week, things had changed to the point when they began to realize, you know, that we were for real. But they began to question the drink. I had to drink constantly to maintain my calories and the blood sugar. It was a formula I had developed of predigested protein and carbohydrate. But it was suspect among a lot of people because they wondered if I had something in there that was illegal. By the end of the week, though, we were in the finals, and I was in the semifinals of the singles. And on the final day, by this time, the New York Times had been publishing an article about us every day. And the front page article of the newspaper on the sports section said, "Ford and Patterson not dead yet." And
wow.
It described the whole thing going on. And then after that, there was a daily update on the progress of the two men at the grass court tournament who were supposed to be dead, now are very much alive and playing winning tennis. At the end of the week, we had hundreds of people in the gallery, and many cancer patients came out. Wegener syndrome patients came out. And it was just like a circus atmosphere. We were just shocked. As we got ready to start, Nick, the chef, came out and stood by the fence. I said, "Nick, we're ready for the..." And he said, "I know, that's why I'm here." But he said, "Reese, I have been good to you all week. And I fed you every 2 or 3 hours. I know you don't have a stomach, so you have to be eating until midnight." I said, "That's right." He said, "Don't you know who I am? I said, no, you're Nick the Chef. He says, for goodness sakes, you guys from Tennessee, I'm the bookie, head bookie out here in Long Island, and we have bet and won every match this week on the two of you, and now we've bet the farm on all the winnings on this one match. He said, I just want to tell you, don't even think about losing this match. I said, Nick, we're just lucky to be here. He said, look at the crowd in the kitchen out there. And they all came out and gave us a thumb up. We went on, had a long three-set match, and we won it. But there was an outpouring of emotion from the spectators of our story and so forth. And it was just very, very, very emotional for all of us. But suddenly, we got pulled back into reality, and they demanded to know what I was drinking in those plastic blue bottles. Did I have steroids? Did I have amphetamines? I said, no, it's just predigested protein and carbohydrate. And they had to get a dietitian to okay what I was drinking before they would even award us the trophy. It was just one of those surreal episodes that you just couldn't begin to describe. But after that, we had write-ups by Parade Magazine, articles all over the paper, the Houston Chronicle, San Francisco. It became wild. But then I got investigated by the U.S. Olympic Committee about what was in that formula I was drinking. I got checked out by them, by Penn State University, by Larry Groppel Sports. Anyway, it got so complicated, but they eventually realized without a stomach, I had to drink the stuff in order to maintain blood sugar for stamina. Then the patients that wonderful final day told us our story had given them hope. Given them hope when everything else had failed. And that was a very, very emotional situation for us. The medical equation, then, one thing I got into to talk about. There are two sides to the medical equation. First of all, there's the medical technology that we've had for the last 100 years. Modern treatment is very, very helpful, and the cure rate is going up with cancer in every type almost. But the other side of the equation is the human factor, and that's what I want to talk about right now, because the human factor too often is ignored. We concentrate too much on medical technology without saying what's going on with a patient's mind. What can they do to complement the above treatment option for the doctors? How can we increase the patient's knowledge of his or her body and how the above treatment option may work? The patient must become proactive and ask questions for their doctors and insist on answers. But in order to ask the right questions, the patient must be fully informed about their disease and possible treatments. Another wonderful resource that we're beginning to take advantage of more and more is talking to other fellow cancer patients who have already dealt with this disease process. And that's true for stomach cancer, breast cancer, anything. We learn from each other so much, Joy, so much. Knowledge gives the patient power and energy and hope in dealing with a health crisis. Patients should change their priorities and make their physical and emotional survival the number one priority in their lives, and make this position in a way that everyone around them, family and friends, understand that they're changing their priorities completely. And this is so terribly important, because in a work ethic environment, often they don't give you much wiggle room. But let's talk about the healing process.
Wait. Hold that thought a second. I want you to comment on what you just said and give my own personal experience of how true that is, how right on that is. Several decades ago, so this isn't a recent phenomena, but I was told that I had a lump on my thyroid gland. So They wanted to do a biopsy on that lump. And they did, and then they told me that the lump had to come out. And how that would happen is they would actually, under my throat, make the incision. So right across my throat, there would be an incision. And it was a matter of scheduling it at the hospital. And I went and got a second opinion, of course. I got the second opinion. That surgeon said the same thing. It has to come out. So I got a call from the hospital a few days later, and they said, "Miss Barry, your bed is ready." And in that moment, it was like the heavens parted, and I said, "Cancel my appointment with the hospital. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to have any man slit my throat." That was how I put it at the time. "No man is going to slit my throat." And I hung up, and I called my surgeon, and I said, "It's not going to happen because I will heal myself." And I had no idea what that meant, none. But I was so clearly that I was going to get rid of this, but having no idea. I'm certainly not a health addict, or I don't even know much about healthy lifestyles, because that wasn't me. I was never one to be fond of exercise and eating right. I often eat the things you're not supposed to eat. I was a chocoholic. So here I said, "I will heal myself." Well, the long and short of it is, from a new age, from a spiritual point of view, I spoke to people, and the throat is all about communication. So I looked at who I held something back from that I didn't communicate, that I didn't tell that person. And it turned out that it was someone I really cared about, and I didn't tell him how I felt about him. So I did that ASAP. A month later, I went to my surgeon. He checked my throat with the gland, and he said he's never, ever seen anything like that before. It totally disappeared. And that is a true story. The lump was gone. So it was my belief and my new age bent, you know, and like Louise Hay has a book on, you know, how every part of your body represents something. So obviously the throat was communication. So indeed, I healed myself. So I know it's possible firsthand. Now, before you go on about the physical and emotional levels, the tennis partner that you referenced, I know you were a surgeon. What was his calling? What did he do for a living?
Stan Ford was a court reporter. All his life, and he was in court constantly.
So he was a court reporter.
Very analytical.
Very cerebral, as I call it.
And we were able to work out a double type of double strategy that really was excellent, and that's how we won the tournaments, was our double strategy.
Well, it was also a very firm and secure belief that you would win it, to win it. Before we go on with your wonderful message today, I just want to give you a message from our health guru, Beverly Nadler, on the importance of listening to this show every day and why that's good for your health. Here's Beverly.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day. A way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner. Great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, We ask that you partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to the homepage of Joyce Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and friends.com. And right under my picture on the upper left, it says follow. And if you click on that, you will get an email about every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any of our shows, because if you can't join us live at 11 a.m. Eastern, you can go 24/7 into the archive. Download any show, hear any show at your convenience. I just want to give a quote from Thomas Edison. The doctor of the future will no longer treat the human frame with drugs, but rather will cure and prevent disease with nutrition. How important is nutrition, Dr. Patterson?
How important is the immune system?
Is nutrition. Eating the right foods.
Nutrition. Nutrition,
yes,
is important. It's very important. And there are no really mysteries about this, about what we need to do. And a lot of patients, including myself, because of my rather unusual diet, not having a stomach, I live on beans and rice, but I take a lot of vitamins because I know I'm lacking in some of the nutritional elements I need to have. But the beans and rice I tolerate so well that I have to really supplement my nutrition with vitamin tablets.
Because I have many guests on the show that talk about healing, and almost all of them say, really stress the importance of nutrition and exercise as paramount, that it really does play a huge role.
No question about that. I think I'm still alive today, George, because of the daily exercise I do. And by the way, there was a Dr. Hodge at Columbia P&S in New York, wrote a bestseller several years ago, wonderful book having to do with exercise, and it was written with him with one of his older patients, and the name of it was Younger Next Year. Younger Next Year, I would urge people to read it, because it's not enough to exercise 2-3 times a week. You need to exercise every day, and he spells out in that book the reason for this. You've got to push your body. Our bodies were meant to move, not to sit. And I think that's one reason why I'm probably still alive today. I think for cancer patients, as much as exercise as they can, depending on their physical condition, they should push themselves, because the exercise is one of the most beneficial things you can do, not only to stay healthy, but when you have an illness, do whatever you can to continue exercise within the limits that your body will permit. Terribly, terribly important, though. Really,
one other thing that I heard was very important, and this was yesterday's show. We had Daniel Weniger, chief communications officer at a company that's all certified organic, that I take their products. They're really fabulous. So he talked about alkalizing and how important that alkalizing your body is. And he has products that do that in his company, www.healthyandorganic.net. But he considers that the most important thing, because cancer can't survive in an alkalized environment. And there's been tons of research on that. Do you know anything about that?
No, I really know very little about that.
Okay. So that's a show I would refer you to when someone could get it for you on the computer. Okay. I've been reading up on it, and it is really significant. It just says that cancer can't survive in an alkalized environment. All right, so you were talking about the two levels of disease, the physical and emotional. What would you like to share about that?
Well, I think that the most important thing is for patients to actively become involved in their survival effort. There again, you can't sit back and let nature take its course. You have to become involved. You have to understand the disease. And if you can really actually participate in your recovery effort, then this usually will improve your quality of life. And once you can improve the quality of life, there is a possibility that you may live longer and perhaps as a case of Stan and me, you might even survive. But in this category, there are no guarantees. Obviously, we're dealing with a very serious type of illness, and there are no guarantees. However, if we don't try to actually participate in a survival effort, then we're losing out on one of the most important things we can do for survival. I tell you one other thing that I think Bernice Siegel talked about, and that is, how do you create the inner peace of your mind that is so essential for the healing process? And I think he said, we need to unconditionally love and accept ourselves and others without judgment, and get rid of some of the junk that goes on in our heads that really makes it difficult to concentrate on our job of survival. And that is so essential for the peace of mind that we all need when trying to survive. I think another thing that has bothered me, I grew up during the Depression, and in the Depression we were all taught, take care of the needs of everybody else first and yourself last. And the societal programming still goes on in this work ethic environment with all the do's and don'ts and the should do's and the must do's. But all of this can affect a patient's survival effort and their priorities. I'll give you an example. For example, when you're on a plane and the plane gets into trouble, then the oxygen mask will drop down. Well, society was in the past has said you must take care of other people first, help them on with their oxygen mask, and yourself last. Well, if you do that, you're not going to last long enough to help many people. Society has it backwards. We have to become fulfilled as individuals before we can build a firm foundation to go out and then be of service to family and their friends and the community at large. That's why they tell you, when the oxygen mask comes down, for goodness sake, put on your mask first, then you're in a position to help others without dying yourself. You help others, but you've got to survive yourself with that oxygen mask. And I think that's so important with our priorities, because we are often programmed to take care of the needs of everybody else before ourselves. There's a wonderful expression for that. It goes like this. Why do the good die young? Well, as far as I'm concerned, the good die young because they're so busy taking care of the needs of everybody else that they don't see to their own personal needs. I call that you've got to learn how to be responsibly selfish. Don't forget that phrase, how to be responsibly selfish. Good. You've got to build a firm foundation, but then you can go out, but you still have to make sure about your own physical and emotional survival. If you don't pay attention to that, you're not going to be around long enough to help other people with their problems. I love the Chinese symbol, by the way, Joyce, for crisis, going back 5,000-6,000 years. The Chinese have two pictographs, one on the right, one on the left. The one on the right, the pictograph signifies danger. The pictograph on the left signifies opportunity. The Chinese believe, and I think they're right, that by concentrating on the opportunity half of that pictograph, that their lives can be lived in a very positive way. And I think that's true of cancer patients. We want to concentrate on the opportunities that are presented and not the dangers. But I'll tell you one other thing, and it is amazing. Cancer has helped me to grow and mature in a way that I had never, ever experienced before. I've heard some of the cancer patients tell me this too. They said, thank God I got cancer. I grew up and matured and began to understand more about life than I had known before. It's remarkable. One other thing that I really have shared with cancer patients is that when you talk about the disease process, there are actually two processes going on. You've got the basic disease with the body, but then you've got another disease above that called how is the patient's emotional reaction to the stress going on. And both of these are important to address. And the doctor and the patient, it's important that they look at the basic pathology of the disease, but then understand how that's affecting the emotional health and stress level of the patient itself. And these are all must be discussed. I think the hardest thing for patients to do is to find some activity or interest that'll help them get out of the bed in the morning, and it will improve the quality of life for them. Something to look forward to. And you got to be sure that your belief systems are helping you and not hurting you. For example, back in 1987, I had a new pair of snow skis I'd planned to ski with the next year. After my surgery, I said, well, I'm going to die. I'll just give away my skis. I gave them away, and then I realized that I was giving my body a die, D-I-E, a die message, and not a live message. So I went back to my friend. I said, please let me have my skis back. I'm going to plan to use them next winter. Well, he looked at me like I was crazy. But I realized I had to give my body a live message, life and living, not death and dying. So symbols become very, very important. One other thing I want to mention, George, is a wonderful chapter in Bernie Siegel's book, in which he divides cancer patients into three types, three categories. The first one, the 15 or 20%, these are the patients that consciously or unconsciously wish to die. Death, for them, is a solution. Their survival rate is very poor. The second group he talks about makes up about 60 to 70% of the patients, and he calls them the passive group. These are known as good little patients. They totally delegate all the decisions to the professionals with no questions. The doctors and nurses like them because they don't have to spend time talking to them. However, they are not participating in their recovery if it's meant to be. Their survival rate is only fair. The third group he talks about are the 15 to 20%, and these are the so-called bad actors. They ask questions. They just bug the heck out of the doctors and the nurses. What's this pill for? And then they're the ones that get second opinions. And in essence, they take charge of their lives, often in ways they've never done before. Their survival rate is absolutely extraordinary. And that's what I like about Dr. Siegel's book, is that he looked at the whole picture, not just the medical part, but also the human factor. And what does it take? How do you fight for your life? How do you look forward to something? How do you have hope? Well, Stan Ford and I found out that our success story gave hope to hundreds and hundreds of people, most of whom we never met. But they wrote to us, they telephoned us, and they wanted to know more. I have this coping manual for stomach cancer patients based on almost 30 years of living without a stomach, and I don't think anybody has written a manual based on 30 years of living without a stomach. There's a market out there for that. Anyway, were you going to ask?
I just wanted to also add, when you talked about the percentage of people who take part in their own healing. And as I said, I've had many people on the show that, authors of books and surgeons. And some of the things included in that are visualization, where you visualize yourself the way you want to be. You see yourself healthy. You see yourself moving. So it starts with visualization. It's all about how the mind controls the body. And then meditation, how important that is to just be quiet, take deep breaths, and get in touch with your inner self and meditate. A lot of people go through, why is this happening to me phase, and that doesn't do anything to move you forward. So it's meditation, it's prayer, it's having faith and belief that you will be better. And then the thing that I believe in so much is miracles. You don't have to know when it's going to come or where it's going to come from, but I certainly believe in miracles.
It happens. You bring up an interesting point, Joyce, about that, and that is it is so important for all of us to seek out information and help each other. We're all down in the trenches together just trying to survive. And I think that whether it be meditation or visualization, and I've done all of them. I've tried them all. And then one day I began to realize, Joyce, they all have this one thing in common. If you sit in the corner of the room and you meditate, or if you do visualizations, I tried them all, I began to realize that the methodology doesn't matter. What matters is that you're taking time out for yourself. You're setting aside 15 and 20 minutes to go off in the corner, take the phone off the hook, and with yourself. In other words, you are nurturing, a form of self-nurturing that is so critical. Then I talked to Stan Ford about this. I said, Stan, do you realize they talk about visualization and meditation? Do you not realize that tennis is a form of meditation for the two of us? We're taking time out to nurture ourselves. And that is the important thing, George. When you take time out, you can meditate, you can visualize things, and whatever activity it is, you're self-nurturing, and that is critical. You're self-nurturing and taking time out for yourself. It's a good point.
So when you talk about the personality of the survivor, you're talking about people who take care of themselves, do what they need to do at their end in partnership with their doctor rather than just relying on the doctor.
Absolutely. You've got to complement with your own effort whatever the treatment the doctor is carrying out. And if you have both sides of that equation, the medical technology and the human factor working together, you have a much better chance of living longer or even surviving because you've got to work with the doctor. You can't sit there and give your body to the doctor on Friday and say, work out on the weekend, I'll pick my body up on Monday, but don't bother me with the details. No, you have to become intimately involved with a doctor-patient relationship and carry out the job of survival together as a team. Don't delegate it just to the doctors. No.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing I've learned.
And how are you able to go so strong? You're 90 years young, and yet I know you spend hours on the phone giving people hope, sending out at your own expense your writings on survivorship. You do all this without a computer. How do you do it?
I'll tell you how. I know my limitations, but I've learned to pace myself. We all have to learn to pace ourselves. Before I had my stomach cancer in 1987, I would work as late as I had to. I'd do this or that. I helped establish the racquet club here. I just felt I could gut my way through anything. A typical male attitude, by the way. We feel we're invulnerable. We can get away with anything. Well, cancer brought me down to my knees. But then I began learning how to take time out for me, self-nurture. And then I began learning how to pace myself. And then I began to identify what areas of the life around me that I had a responsibility to participate in, and then what I did not have a responsibility to participate in. There's some things I began to realize were beyond my control, and I dropped it. In other words, I cannot take on the problems of other people beyond a certain point. In other words, it's presumptuous for any one of us to try to take on the problems of other people and solve them. We can help facilitate, but we've got to realize our responsibility, though, stops at a certain point, and you cannot impose your sense of what must be done on the patient completely. They have to look at the facts, and they make the decision. You cannot make that decision for other people. And that was an enormous step forward for me as far as understanding relationships. I'm glad to help. I got to pace myself, and I have a special phone system here that I call back every patient on my phone number so they don't have to pay for it. That way they don't feel any constraints of time. I have the same thing for international phone calls. I've got a special rate for that. When they call me from Europe or Asia, as they do in South America, I call them back so that I'm paying for the phone call, and that way they don't feel any constraints about the time element, and that's terribly important. I spend at least an hour with each patient when they call, and then within the next 2-3 days, I will FedEx a package to them dealing with their specific type of cancer, and I deal with far more than just stomach cancer, Joyce. I deal with patients with all kinds because essentially we all have the same problem. How do you approach a major health problem like cancer? Well, that's what we've talked about for the past hour. There's a methodology and a technique for approaching these things and getting the answers and learning our own responsibility, not only for ourselves, but the responsibility for the welfare of other people. But we got to be careful about taking on the responsibilities for other people, because beyond a certain level, then they have to take over the responsibility to make certain decisions for themselves. But you can help them gather the data that will enable them to make the right decision with which they'll be comfortable. I think I funny little episode. I think stress, Joyce, is one of the most important things, that in a fast-moving society like we have in this country, stress is a major factor in many, many syndromes that come up. I know it was for me. I think my stomach cancer, your stress tends to lessen the efficiency of your immune system. But there are two types of stress, and I always emphasize this with every patient with whom I talk. Take, for example, there's a positive and negative type of stress, and often the patient don't even define it. But positive stress is stress that you have control over. Negative stress is stress over which you've lost control, and that type of stress over which you've lost control can be hurtful and damaging and destructive and can produce all kinds of illnesses, some benign, some malignant. There's never a single cause for any cancer. There are many causes for cancer. My family has a genetic familial tendency toward cancer. We know this. There are pollutants out there that cause cancer. So that there are many different things that come together that make up the causes for any one case of cancer. But get back to positive and negative stress. Every day we go and drive on the highway. We come to red light. Well, we stop. Now, that is stressful because we have to stop. And if we're in a hurry, it's a bit stressful, but it's not destructive. It's positive stress, not negative. It's positive stress because we know that red light's going to turn green and immediately we can go forward. But suppose that same traffic light shorts out, and when it turns green, it suddenly turns red again. Now, wait a minute. Now we can't move. Well, we wait again. It turns green. We start forward, and it shorts out again. Well, now we've lost control over that traffic light and the situation. That positive stress has become negative stress because we've lost control over the system. The system doesn't work, and now we're stressed out. Multiply the stresses in the lives of all of us, and we ignore the question about, is this positive stress or negative stress? We must categorize and identify negative stress and do something about it.
Absolutely. On positive stress, it could be planning a wedding. So you've got lists of to-do things you got to deal with, but it's positive stress. Negative stress is all the people around you that are negative, that tell you that something you can't do, that have judgments on you. And I can't stress enough how important it is to keep away from those people and that energy. And on the positive side, I just wanted to add a couple of more components in one's healing, and that is gratitude. You have to be grateful for everything that comes your way. And it's about taking lemonade out of the lemon. So most people say, how can you be grateful for everything? I'm going through this major illness. So you got to look for everything happens for a reason. And if you can see how that is making you stronger, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Gratitude being very, very important. And also humor. I would say those two things are very, very important in the equation of healing. I put on shows that make me laugh. I saw 3 Jerry Lewis movies last week. I love the classics. So things that are light, upbeat, Broadway kind of shows, I think they're very important elements as well.
I think you're right, Joyce. I think you're right. You can't take life too seriously. You got to be able to laugh. You've got to. One final statement about about negative stress. You can identify negative stress by the fact that you've lost control over it. That's the red flag. You lose control over it, you do something about it. You don't ignore it. But humor is very, very important. There's no question about it.
I
love the term gallows humor. You can even joke about death called gallows humor. But you're right on about the humor. It's so important for all of us. Very important.
I want to go to my studio lunch just for a moment. There's a couple of numbers I've never seen before. If you wish, 404-395. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Arlene Denny, and I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia. And I just want to tell folks that Reese is, well, I consider Reese to be my personal mentor. I think he's fantastic. I was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. And, you know, it's not a pretty diagnosis. And I didn't really hear that much of encouragement. And yet friends of mine put me in contact with Reese. And, you know, to have somebody who's 90 years old, who survived stomach cancer for 30 years, that turned on the light for me. That was giving me hope. And Reese has been so tremendous in terms of recommending different foods, what to eat, because when you don't have a stomach, well, you know, you gotta eat differently to take care of yourself. So I know that Reese helps people all around the world, and he helps them in terms of dealing with cancer psychologically and physically, food-wise, emotionally. And I just would recommend that people contact Reese, and maybe you can get the phone number.
Arlene, I want to thank you for taking the time to call in and validating our guest today. I really genuinely appreciate it. Reese, do you want your number on air? This is a worldwide show. That's up to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get calls all the time, Joyce.
Okay. So the number is 865.
And I'm welcome it.
865-588-8169 to reach Reese Patterson directly. I never gave out a guest number. 865-588-8169. And to you, Arlene, I want to say first, I wish you a good health and to stay in good health. And I really recommend you listen to our shows of the past week. We have done a lot about this kind of thing. Yesterday's show was Prevent, Treat, and Heal from Cancer. The day before, Chaplain Oscar, Hope and Healing. The day before that, Dr. Bernie Siegel, The Art of Healing. So we're putting a lot of shows together because so many people are facing so many health challenges. We want to be there for them. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Thank you.
I have another number here I don't recognize, 714-349. Do you want to share your name and where you're calling from? 714-349. It's okay to remain silent. That's fine. You're not in the host queue, but sometimes I call on people, and like Arlene, that wasn't, and they care to jump in. Reese, as you can see, it's like time to start wrapping up here. I know, you know, we'll do more shows with you. You have so much to say. But what do you want to say in summing up? What message do you want to leave our people?
I think, Joyce, that the we cancer patients are a rather unusual collection of individuals. We reach out to each other. We're all down in the trench together trying to survive. And there's no way to survive without the help of other people, especially fellow cancer patients. And that's why I feel so strongly about being available. I never initiate a call to a cancer patient. It'd be unethical. But if any cancer patient called me, I'd be glad to share with them what I've learned over the past 30 years of this disease process that we call cancer. And the fact is, I'm down in the trenches with all of you with cancer. We help each other, we share information, and we share coping techniques. And that's where I'm coming from. Enjoy being with you today. Enjoy being with you today.
You are indeed a gift to the universe. You really are a gift. I know firsthand how you're there for people because I've recommended people call you and they were blessed by you. You made a point to say how important exercise is, and I say too many people confine their exercise to jumping to conclusions, running up bills, stretching the truth, bending over backwards, lying down on the job, sidestepping responsibility, and pushing their luck. That was on a lighter note. But you really hit home how important it is. And I want to end the show with my special personal prayer for all of you. Make this the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May this be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. Again, thank you, Dr. Reese Patterson. I know that you made a big difference in the lives of people listening, and we are all around the world. And folks, I invite you to sing along with us, dance along with us, and laugh along with us, starting right here, right now, with the Joyce Barry Mash.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again, as Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day.
Wow.
And listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.
Wow.